back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate it. Still come in the 11 o'clock hour. Scott Buttram with the Trustful Tribune joins us, and then we will wrap it up with State Auditor Jim Ziegler. That's in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. But joining us now, very exciting, given the breaking news and what's going on here around the state, former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne joins us on the line. Jay, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Tons of notice to come on and talk about Mr. Ham here, right?
Yeah. Well, so, just kind of came out. Just kind of came out. But we were texting during Thanksgiving week, and I saw it was Alabama Appleseed or Josh Moon or somebody, APR, had reported that the DOJ had gone in, amended their complaint, and that's when I knew there was trouble. It seemed to me that the DOJ wasn't taking a wait-and-see approach coming out of this prison special session, that, you know, you're making progress, we're going to give you time to implement some of this. No, they were saying, no, you continue to have problems here. You're continuing what we told you, what we warned you about. And when I saw that, I was like, you know, this is not going in a good place, that there's going to be there's trouble in paradise, and it's just inevitable, it seems. It's like you say, the DOJ is undefeated in these cases. Mm-hmm. But it looks to me that, you know, I guess they finally said, hey, it's just not working out. Or he came to that realization, Jeff Dunn, Commissioner Jeff Dunn, stepping aside at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame people for sort of hoping that maybe things would sort of stay themselves and there would be more time for the state of Alabama to make some corrections. The problem with that is, and what I've said all along, is that is not how the Department of Justice operates. If they identify a problem, it is their duty and mission to fix that problem at that point, especially when they deem something the problem, in this case, a constitutional violation of the Eighth Amendment. So they're not going to just allow prisoners to have their constitutional rights violated every single moment of every day that they are confined in an Alabama men's facility, while Alabama, continues to sort of, frankly, fumble around with how it's correcting the prison problem. And, What can John Hamm or, previously Jeff Dunn do about the overcrowding in our prisons when more prisoners are being sent to those prisons every day? Steve Marshall, what can he do to defend the overcrowding and the sexual and physical violence, the contraband entering the prisons, if there aren't facilities and personnel appropriated to oversee against these constitutional violations? More than most of the male prisons in Alabama have staffing at 50% or lower. Dunn has previously called the current facilities, all of them, dilapidated and unsafe. So who would want to work there, first of all? And so there's a direct correlation between levels of staffing and levels of violence. It's great that the legislature addressed the build of new prisons. That's a great long-term solution, but only if those new prisons aren't immediately filled to the rim on the day that they open. So we do have to re-examine who we send to prison. We also have to admit that around 75% of the people in prisons belong there. They're violent. But are they longer because of prior felony convictions that may or should have been misdemeanors? I don't want to give anybody the impression that I'm for sort of this look back resentencing structure. I think our parole structure can handle that. But we have to take a look at all of, because everything is interconnected. And so a holistic solution is the only one that is going to work in the state of Alabama. We can't build our way out of it. We can't parole our way out of it. We can't hire our way out of it. We have to do all of these things.
Well, I tell you though, the thing that sticks out in my mind is the staffing situation. And look, you have guys that are working in these facilities that are breaking the law, and they're breaking the law time and time and time again. You don't hear about the state going after these guys or the state trying to do something to tamp down on that. That's where I think that I'm a little underwhelmed, and I don't know that there's necessarily a solution there, because if you start cracking down, then all of a sudden you run into some staff shortages. But we're going to run into this problem, And while we're sitting here talking about it, but that's not what the legislature is talking about. That's not what the governor is talking about. The people in power, the Democrats want to just reform sentencing and reform the criminal justice system. I don't think that that is necessarily the solution either. I just think the politics don't lend itself to them. But we're talking about building new prisons, and we're not really looking at the existing problems right now. And I think the DOJ said, why aren't you doing something about this?
Well, staffing, other than the facilities themselves, like the actual structures themselves, where toilets don't work, there's no hot water, the smoke detectors don't work, there's leaks in the roof and flooding in the bathrooms, all bad for morale, by the way. And again, who would want to work there? But it also is not good for the behavioral sort of psyche of the inmates as well. But the more prison guards you have, Jeff, the less likely prison guards that are dirty, that are bringing contraband into the facilities, when I say facilities, I mean prisons, that are bringing into the facilities contraband, like weapons or drugs, narcotics, then when you have more eyeballs that are sort of watching all of that, it's harder to do. It's less likely to happen. So that means there's less contraband, less weapons. And when you have those things, then you have less violence. You have a safer place. And so we have to find creative ways to get experienced law enforcement professionals inside of our prisons. One great way is what Birmingham Fleet PD did, and I think we've discussed this before, is the state of Alabama allowed them to hire retired officers, and they could come and work at BPD, get a full check, and still maintain their retirement because BPD was so short on staffing. They needed good help. They needed good leadership. And at the time, they were the largest city in the state, certainly the largest county metropolis area of the state. We can do the same thing with our prisons, and we can get instant leadership, instant experience. We could abate some of the staffing issues in most of our prisons and really get those staffing numbers up. The more eyeballs you have, the less violence there's going to be. Again, there's a direct correlation between levels of staffing and levels of violence.
But we're going to be in this situation where it's a job nobody wants, and we can institute these remedies, like you said, but what's the market going to dictate? Who is going to want to work there? What is a fair wage for a prison guard? And I don't think whatever it is now, you just don't have any takers, and people would rather not do that. Are we going to be in a situation where we're going to have to pay way above the market value of what we think it should be to get people to work there? And is that something that the legislature just needs to kind of bite the bullet and say, until we get these prisons up and we can get the right technology in place, that we're going to have to do it this way?
Well, that might be, but again, if you could collect your retirement from your current law enforcement agency and then go work as an officer, a prison guard in a facility and get paid a decent wage, even if it's sort of the average wage, and some would consider that sort of double dipping. So you're actually almost getting twice what the salary is that you're making right now. So those that are eligible to retire right now, say they're in their 20th year, that might stretch that to 30. They might spend the next 10 years working in Alabama prisons and collect a second retirement. I mean, that's, we have to think that way. The retirement systems of Alabama has a mountain of value and money. And this is a good exception for that. So that we can get good people working in the safety parameters of our prison system.
Do you think anything like that would satisfy or appease? You say the DOJ doesn't work that way, but I guess it would be this. If you had those people in, maybe you start narrowing down where the Eighth Amendment violations are taking place. You have fewer and fewer instances of that. That would really, they're more interested in the results and less interested in the whatever measures that you're taking, right?
Correct. They're not going to sit on their hands and hope. They're basing much of this lawsuit on data. And that data, a lot of it is incomplete data, so it's actually underreported data. And they're going to continue to move ahead with this lawsuit. until that data is demonstrably different, and different in a positive way. And even still, there might be some things that they have to mandate or at least oversee and monitor for some period of time, maybe not by a consent decree, but by some sort of joint agreement where, they don't just trust that Alabama is going to continue to do the right things by their prisons. They're going to oversee it and then have the ability to immediately address the court if Alabama, sort of drops the ball or refuses to comply because they want to build their, 15th bridge to, Gulf Shores instead of investing in staff in our prisons.
Well, it seems to me, though, at this point in time, if I'm handicapping what's going to happen, I still think it's very grim for the state. That there just seems inevitable to me. I mean, they would have to. It would take an act of the legislature or something to do some of these outside the box thinking remedies. But in the interim, those will still take time to be instituted, and you're still going to have these violations. And it's curious to me, Jay, and I don't know if this was something that you encountered, but a lot of times when we see these amended complaints or we see what's going on, that it is some of these instances seem a little dated to me. Sometimes they reference something that happened in 2018 or earlier. That is it a case where the DOC here in Alabama isn't necessarily providing the data? They're not. That we're hearing through a lot of these things through the media. Another inmate dies or something like that. You have a violent situation. You have a drug overdose when these prisons are supposed to be on lockdown because of COVID. That they're more kind of reacting to what's happening anecdotally.
Well, they amended that complaint because the state asked them to. So that's why you got all those specifics. I guess it was, I want to say last month, maybe it was October. But that is why the DOJ amended the complaint, so the state could have some more specifics. And I understand your point about the dated, but just keep in mind, those are just examples. In some ways, they are just colloquial. But there's no denying that there are some serious flaws in the way we house our inmates in the state of Alabama. And look, I played a pretty significant role in putting people in prison for much of my career. Since I arrived in Alabama in 2005, I was a state prosecutor for 13 years, and then I worked very closely as a United States attorney with district attorneys across the largest district in the state, over 3 million people, so that we could decide if we wanted to send people to federal or state prison. So a lot of those people are in prison, and they deserve it. That's where they should be. Maybe not for as long as they're due to be there, but those are other conversations, and those are little nits. I don't know that that's going to solve the long-term problem here. For me, and this isn't anybody in power's fault, but it is their problem. And so we really have to, I think, focus in the next legislative session on staffing. For John Hamm, I hope he puts together a good package, and I hope it includes some common sense solutions, because staffing will make the prison safer until the facilities themselves are safer. And some of the appropriation has to go to improving the facilities that we exist too. And yeah, we're going to tear them down maybe in 5 years, but for 5 years, they have to be safe.
Well, do you think, though, sitting here today, though, that is there any reason to think that the federal judge and the DOJ are that this isn't going to head into a California situation?
Boy, look, this is where I say I hope not. But if measures aren't taken in the next legislative session, at the end of the quadrennium, maybe nobody wants to address it. I don't know, but if it's bad politics, whatever, DOJ could care less. They could not care less about the politics of this, because there are 20,000 inmates that they believe a good number of them are having their constitutional rights violated, both the 8th and 14th Amendment. So they're not just going to sit back and hope for the best in 2023's legislative session. And they're going to continue to move forward, and I'm sure so is Judge Proctor. who's the federal judge overseeing this case. And I don't know that Alabama has that long to wait. Steve Marshall's doing all he can. Jeff Dunn, I don't know what he could have done differently. John Hamm walks into a really awful situation. And so really appropriating against some of these problems is the only way to abate against them.
Yeah, but at some point, we Jeff Dunn had been in place for 6 years, and things just continued to deteriorate they had gotten worse. I don't know what he could have done. It's just not my field of expertise, but clearly the result was underwhelming, right?
Well, I mean, if you don't get money for guards, and I know there was a point where he did get money for some more guards, but that money's been spent. This is going to have to be an annual, revenue peak, and they're going to have to expend more dollars on prisons in Alabama, and voluntarily as a legislature. If not, then it will be involuntary under a consent decree. I mean, you pick which one you want to do as an Alabama citizen. You want to have some control and some say, or do you want it to just be the federal government dictating how you spend certain dollars and on what? Go ahead.
Last question on that. It's going to be way more expensive, the federal route, than whatever the state does.
Well, I don't know about that. I would be guessing if I said yes or no to that. But what I can tell you is we could at least be able to prioritize things our way if we weren't under a consent decree. Some of those costs maybe could be deferred for a period of 6 months until certain revenues come in for the state. But if the state also needs to come up with ways to find revenues. If we don't have them, come up with ways to find them. This is an awful situation, and there's no easy fix here. There's no one big swing like building three big prisons that just gets DOJ out of your hair. So we're going to have to do a multitude of things, and they're all going to have to sort of intersect holistically in order to solve this problem.
Jay, you've been very kind to make time for us this morning. We always appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jay Towne, former U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, there on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And left his living in a cheap hotel. There's this quiet, Cleveland's cold. So the story ends, we're told. Ponto needs your prayers, it's true. Save a few.